the like loungewear that had holes near the crotch, near the butt, on the leg, often. Often.
It's like
I
that.
yeah.
It's like that thing from How I Met Your Mother, where with the underwear radius, where like as the sadder you get, the larger the radius gets, where you're willing to walk out in public with your underwear. Like
Right.
I
sometimes it's
haven't
just a
seen the
hallway.
show, but I
You
get
know,
that.
I did
Yes.
actually have a pair of underwear in the hood of my sweatshirt once, and someone pointed it out on the train, because apparently when I've been doing laundry, the underwear had gotten stuck in the hood. And so thankfully, she stood next to me on the train and let me know that I would not continue my commute with underwear hanging
You know
out of my
how
hood.
when you wear like compression pants or compression shorts underneath gym clothes? Like, there was one time where I walked out and I literally forgot to put the shorts on over them, and that's
Oh,
all you
good.
feel. So
Oh,
it's just like,
good.
so now every once in a while I'm looking down, I'm like, all right, cool, I
Yeah.
got my shorts on.
Nice.
I'm Izzy Gutierrez, that's Sarah Spain, that's June Lee. This is Debatable, where we just talk about stuff. And what do we got first there, Charlie?
All right, so we are going to start with this league, the never-ending NBA drama. And our first question is, what do you make of the latest updates on Ben Simmons and James Harden?
Whew, there's a lot to unpack about this trade. It wasn't going to be just a one day worth of talking about it, but we had both Ben Simmons and James Harden get in front of a mic. So let's listen to them first before we decide to talk about this.
You guys do have a game in Philly in a couple of weeks. Do you think you can be ready for that? You know, physically, mentally, you know, I imagine that's a pretty.
I hope so.
Did you speak with Joel?
No, I did not.
Why did you want out of Brooklyn, and why did you want Philadelphia to be your destination?
Originally, you know, when I was going through everything I was going through, you know, in Houston, Philly was my, you know, my first choice.
Interesting there. Obviously, I think, you know, there's a Daryl Morey tie there, but I'm not sure where you guys want to go. So I'm just going to go to you, Sarah, because we've got the James Harden side of it, and there's a great Jake Fisher story on the Bleacher Report just sort of detailing his sort of last year there and the final days. And there's also the Ben Simmons part. The James Harden stuff you could probably have fun with. The Ben Simmons part's probably a little bit more
Right,
serious. Where do you want to
right.
start there,
I want
Sarah?
to start with James Harden. We'll get to Ben Simmons and all the intricacies and difficulties in discussing everything there. But I'm curious whether the Daryl Morey part of all of this gives Philly fans a bit of satisfaction and a bit less nerves about what's to come. What we've seen from James Harden when he's in a place that he's happy is a guy who's one of the greatest scorers of all time. Not my favorite player. The attitude issues, the effort issues have always been something that have bothered me. But we know he can be incredibly effective. When Daryl Morey's not around, things start to go awry. They went awry in Houston when Daryl Morey left. They went awry with the Nets when Daryl Morey's not around. So is it enough to say that being with the Sixers where he wanted to be and being back with Daryl Morey is the answer for James Harden? That the effort will be there regardless of whether things go the way he wants or not? That he'll be worth the contract, which, by the way, is going to be exorbitant for a guy who I don't see aging particularly well in terms of his game? Or if you're a Sixers fan, are you wondering if you're going to be the next team that he decides, I'm going to be late to games that I'm not playing in because I need to go to Vegas and hit up some strip clubs? I'm going to be
Well, that's
potentially putting on weight and
the
not being available. Am I, you know, is this a guy that you can really count on? Because you've got an MVP in Embiid, you've got a team on the brink of greatness, and this could either be the thing that puts you over or could make this process continue to be a process and not a result for a long time.
Well, June, this is the interesting part that I wonder, and this is, you know, speaks to Sarah's answer is, what is it that James Harden wants? Because we've heard in the past reports about him telling Steph Curry, hey, I wish I played with you guys. Now we see in this Jake Fisher report that Nets officials or Nets coaches would see him roll his eyes whenever they called a play for Kevin Durant, and that he wanted more of the ISO ball, and that Mike D'Antoni brought in more of a free-flowing offense that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant wanted. And now it's just James Harden saying, nah, I want what I wanted in Houston before. Let me go see if I can do that with Joel Embiid.
It kind of seems like he doesn't know what he wants, is he? It seems like he's kind of chasing the next shiny thing, because just from a talent standpoint, there's not a better situation in the NBA to set yourself up for a championship run than playing next to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving for 50% of those games. Like, you look around the NBA right now, I think he was already in the best situation from a talent standpoint. And, you know, Sarah rightly points out a lot of the attitude concerns, like the locker room chemistry stuff, the general motivation that Harden might have to be a good player this season. But the thing that concerns me is just generally his playing style. Like, he's 32 years old. Yes, he's in a situation where he's being able to be motivated by a guy like Daryl Morey, a guy who he clearly respects and wanted to play for. But Harden has been an iso ball player his entire career. I think Embiid, more so than the big men of the past, needs the ball in his hands because he's most dynamic when he's, you know, going full court, has the ball in his hands to pass off to guys. He's a really, really, I think, underrated passer. He's someone who really needs the ball in his hands to be the most dynamic version of himself, which I think we've seen this season because he hasn't been playing with Ben Simmons. So when you look at that and how Embiid has been able to be the best version of himself this year, combined with, you know, the way that James Harden has played his entire career, which has been, you know, waiting, you know, dribbling down 12 seconds of the shot clock to pull up and do a step back three, I'm not sure that just from a basketball standpoint, it's the greatest fit in the world.
Well, also interesting, yeah, though, really quick, that James Harden, he wants to be an ISO player who can be ball dominant, but he also doesn't want the team to depend on him. You know,
right.
He's at a point in his career where I actually think he is a little bit more willing to acquiesce in terms of the way the team needs to run, to be a part of a system more so than before, but it has to look exactly the way he wants. And that wasn't going that way with the Nets because Kyrie was in and out, because Durant was hurt. And so the question is, will the way it feels for him with the Sixers work simply because he'll have the help he needs, but also some space? Yes, Alabaster.
Go ahead, Charlie.
So, for the sake of basketball journalistic integrity, I have to push back a tiny bit, June, on him always being an ISO ball player. Early in James Harden's tenure, obviously with the Thunder, but then in Houston, he was one of the great pick-and-roll players we have ever seen in basketball. And in theory, just in theory, that should work with Joel Embiid incredibly well with the space they have on the floor.
Well, right. And that's what I was just going to go do. If we just go back and paint the picture of James Harden's career, right? The first stop with Oklahoma City, not really responsible, not the top two guy, not where all the eyes are going to go if they feel blamed. So he filled that six-man role, did it great. Got to Houston, pick and roll partner in Dwight Howard, you know, ideal pretty much, didn't really work out there. Chris Paul, obviously a little bit of a sort of redundance in terms of skill sets, in terms of handling the ball and such, still didn't really work out. They were at each other's throats. You could say, hey, you know, Chris Paul can be a bit of a guy who can get at people's, you know, getting on people's bad side. I understand that as well. Russell Westbrook, you can make the argument, hey, again, clashing of styles, you know, star and Russell Westbrook sort of on the decline, maybe didn't really work out. But Kevin Durant, like, is there somebody in the league right now where you say in terms of, like, pure basketball, like that's what gives him joy and winning is what he, like Kevin Durant is almost the ideal, if you strip everything down, just playoff teammate or basketball teammate. And he just didn't really like it. And whether it be a clash of styles, whether it be a clash of personalities, or whether he's blaming the Kyrie Irving part, it just didn't really work out again. So what gives you the, or anybody, the idea that, hey, with a strong-minded, you know, loud, you're not going to hold back teammate like Joel Embiid, who is clearly the number one guy? Because if you step back and make Harden less of James Harden, he's just a guy. Like, he's not this super efficient scorer who's going to complement Joel Embiid very well. So he needs to be himself and find a way to incorporate Joel Embiid. And I just don't have any evidence that that's going to work at a championship level yet.
Well, I think back to when he played with Howard and how that didn't work out. Like, he was the definitive number one at that point. And Embiid is a guy who I think, you know, is part of the modern, you know, wave of big men where they need the ball more in his hands. And that makes me think his lack of success with Dwight Howard is going to make this difficult, much more kind of tenuous for him, because he's a guy who is older and has played with the ball in his hands a lot more over the course of the last couple of years.
Well, and then let's go to the other part too, because in this Jake Fisher report, you've got a lot of the sort of the separation, him separating himself from the Nets this year. A lot of his normal routine, which is, hey, we're going to Utah, you guys go to the next city, I'm going to stop in Vegas here. Oh, we're going to San Antonio, hey, I'm going to spend a couple of days or maybe a day or two in Houston here. And sort of in terms of like team building, in terms of team chemistry, in terms of creating this situation where your superstars have their own rules. And I know that's worked in the past for a lot of people, but I don't know about building a super team right off the edge, like right off the bat like that. I don't know how much of that is going to be allowed in Philly, but I also know that it's just not, at some point, because it is so well known at this point, he's going to have to be reeled in, right?
Right. Well, and I wanted to ask you guys quickly, when it comes to the hamstring, Is it possible there's a little bit of reputational cleanup that's happening by alleging that it needs to heal a little bit more, and that's why he's missing the All-Star game? Do we actually think he's missing it because his hamstring still needs to heal, or because it would be very suspect to not be able to play for the Nets, a team that he was asking out of, and then immediately be ready to go for the All-Star game and the Sixers?
I think James likes the All-Star situation better. You know, I think he'd be more willing to play and experience that than not. I think, you know, if according to that story, there was some inflammation on the MRI and it kind of reminded him last year before
right.
he blew it out a little bit. So I could buy that, but I could also see your side of that, Sarah.
I'm just wondering because it certainly didn't feel like Nets players or team felt like there was legitimacy to him sitting out as much as he was. There was something, I believe there was a hamstring that they could see. Whether there was something wrong with the hamstring was up for debate. And that's why I'm curious, especially because we saw the hilarious exchange with LeBron and Durant and the TNT crew as they were selecting their All-Star teams. There were a lot of jokes from Barkley and company about how he's healthy and fine and he'll be ready to go next game now that he's not on the Nets anymore.
It also just seems from the comments from the Nets post Harden trade that there was a sense of exasperation around him, that people were kind of tired of putting up with him, of having to deal with this, you know, media circus of, is he playing? Does he actually want to play? Is he actually hurt? Like, it, given that there just generally seems to be a sense of exhaustion there, like, it really makes me question how the extent of this injury, to Sarah's point, because of all the people in this trade, to potentially, you know, just be like, ah, look at this, my hamstrings are hurting out. Like, just of all the people in the NBA that would put themselves through that situation, Harden has done in the past. He has a reputation of doing stuff like this. Like, he's right up there. And I think it's pretty plausible that this might be a thing that he would have considered doing just to kind of make the situation as difficult as possible.
By the way,
I think it's pretty funny. You got James or Ben Simmons creating this whole situation in Philadelphia. He leaves. I know he hasn't been around the team, but he leaves. And now you've got the Nets. It's the Nets saying, Bruce Brown saying it's the Nets locker room that's way better and the vibe has changed after getting rid of James Harden. That's pretty telling.
Well, I mean, that's also the storyline for a lot of places that James Harden is gone. Yeah, we got that out of the way. The guy who wasn't putting in the effort, the guy who wanted out, let's, you know, move on. And that's why, again, I'm just curious. I heard a lot of Sixers fans calling into local radio with zero concerns about how this is all going to go down. That is a massive contract, and that is a very, 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 very tricky guy with a lot of red flags. And I don't think they
all those hours
disappear.
And hours of listening to Philadelphia radio finally coming into good use here.
No, no.
Sarah.
Somebody collected them for me. Thankfully, I was not subjected to a full day. I was given the highlights.
So, and like to your point, Sarah, like this kind of talk around Harden in Philadelphia almost reminds me of what happened with Kyrie and the Nets when Nets fans were kind of trying to talk themselves into Kyrie Irving being a big fit, like. The definition of insanity is like doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Like Kyrie Irving and James Harden have shown you who they are with their behavior over the course of their entire career. Like,
by the way,
expecting anything different to happen.
I would also like, I was going to commend myself on my maturity and not I told you so-ing, but that's really just because I haven't had an opportunity to. I told you so. 16 games that they played together, zero titles. Kyrie was even more problem than you thought he was going to be because we didn't even realize all the stuff was going to go down with the vaccine. This was what I thought would happen.
You got close to maturity.
I did.
And
then
you saw an angle.
You saw an opportunity to slide in and remind everybody. And I hate I love watching Kevin Durant play basketball. He is one of my favorite basketball players of all time when it comes to what he does on the court. Some of the other stuff, you know, I feel very empathetic for him, but it's not super endearing. But I'm sad because that's what I was sad about when that deal went down. I was like, I don't think this is going to work. It's going to be a mess, and what's going to be lost in all of it is the ability to watch Kevin Durant shine. And it just obviously they got pretty close last year despite injury, but yeah, I mean, it happened exactly as I thought it would. Harden and Kyrie, you know, imploding.
So go ahead, Charlie.
That actually brings me to the other half of this discussion, which is
right.
For those 16 games and then obviously the series against June's beloved Celtics where the Nets looked like an offensive juggernaut the league had ever seen, that blew up not because of the basketball court. Like, point guard James Harden showed up in the Nets and we were, like, floored by the fact that he was distributing and not just playing iso ball. And my question is, how do you think this works with Ben Simmons now? He's someone who his teammates also were tired of for years before this actually broke down in Philadelphia. And you're now throwing him into an incredibly high-pressure situation. with two guys who need to win championships now in Kyrie and Durant.
It's a little bit of a better fit, though, because
yeah,
he can sit there and just fill the voids that the team needs. They don't need shooting. They can use some, you know, play creation. That's fine. He's fine. He's good at that. They can use some post play. He's good there. They definitely could use some versatile defenders, and he's probably, you know, top five in the league in that scenario. So I do think the pressure situation, I think it's lessened some when you've got sort of the talent and the aura of Kevin Durant there. Like, this is Kevin's team, and whatever happens, you know, lives and dies with him. You've got Kyrie Irving taking so much attention for so many other reasons. Ben Simmons can kind of settle in and be sort of the anti-James Harden that doesn't require him to score 35 points, but can do all the other things to make those other guys shine. The interesting part to me is whether he is, you know, mentally capable of doing this, whether he is sort of refreshed, whether he's gathered himself enough to be able to handle this, because, you know, he's talked about his sort of mental struggles a little bit. People sort of mock him upon his return, saying, oh, all of a sudden now he's back. We are not equipped to talk about much of most mental health issues, but we are certainly not allowed to get into somebody's head. So all that conversation becomes very difficult around Ben, and I feel bad for him, frankly.
I also think, too, with the mental health thing specifically, like, if you're in a bad situation and you're suddenly out of that bad situation, whether it's a relationship or a work situation, like, that is an instant amount of relief, because that is a mental weight that has been on you for a lot of time. And, like, obviously, we don't know enough about Ben Simmons's mental health history, like his family history, all that stuff, to be able to talk about this with any sort of insight or depth. But I do think, for the people who, you know, kind of laugh at Ben Simmons immediately being in a, you know, better mental health headspace, it kind of makes sense. If you're in a toxic relationship or in a toxic work environment that you suddenly get out of, like, yes, it's going to relieve a lot of stress immediately.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, to both your points, like, we're new as a society in being willing to openly discuss issues of mental health. And I think our conversations will get better and smoother and more informed as we go on. But I don't know that we'll ever be in a position where we can accurately distinguish when somebody is struggling and suffering because of mental health issues and when their behaviors simply reflect a an unhappiness or a dissatisfaction with the situation that they're in. And if you are able to use throwing a hissy fit or demanding out to get what you want, that's what James Harden's been doing all along. We haven't attributed it to mental health. We've just said James Harden doesn't want to be there anymore, so he's going to pretend he's fat and he's going to go to strip clubs and he's not going to play well. We didn't do that with Ben Simmons because Ben Simmons appears to have actual issues that he's going through. And I think a change of scenery is a massive decider in whether he allegedly... A change of scenery is a massive decider in how his behavior will react. The fact that there was very clearly issues between him and Embiid and other folks around that city is going to be lifted off his shoulders when he gets a chance to go somewhere else. I want to say, Izzy, the basketball fit that you mentioned is a huge difference, because I also think, in addition to the fact that what he gets to do on that team is best suited to his abilities, way more so than what he was expected or asked of in Philly, but also that Nets team has been a mess at this point. The expectation is not that he slides in and they're right back to, they should be the favorites, this is the big three, they should win everything. People don't really know what's going to happen with that team, with Kyrie's availability, with Durant's injury, with how Ben Simmons is going to fit. I just think you've lowered the expectations there, that if they start to cook because he's a good fit, he's going to get way more credit than he will get blame if it doesn't work, in my opinion.
Too, on top of that, like, Simmons, when he was drafted by the Sixers, was expected to be one of the franchise saviors, and, like, the expectations are just lower here, like, especially given that, you know, he's now experienced, like, one team, he's been in one organization his entire life, he's going to go to a different environment, he might have the opportunity to grow from the situation. I try to give a little bit more benefit of the doubt because of Ben Simmons' age, and hopefully he can, you know, mature as a person than I would James Harden, given that we've seen Harden kind of do this over and over again.
Let me just say this before we move on. So this is sort of the transition place that I think we're at when it comes to sort of a mental health conversation, right? So I was talking to a former player, a good former player, somebody who had like MVP buzz at some point in his life, right? Some point in his career. And he was talking about at some point when he changed teams and was hurt, and how people were talking about him poorly, saying he was soft, he was a bum, whatever. And for 2 weeks during an injury, could not leave his house. because he was afraid, because he's going to get recognized everywhere he goes. It's not like the rest of us who can just put on a hoodie and put on some sunglasses and hide. And didn't want to leave the house, didn't want to face anybody, didn't really know what he was going through, just knew he just didn't want to go anywhere. And the idea that, you know, several years from now, he looked back and said, man, like, that was a bout of depression, whether it be a short period, whether it be a longer, you know, story that, you know, he maybe didn't notice before. Like, those are the types of things that, whether or not we can say with certainty, hey, Ben Simmons was going through some stuff, to put yourself in his shoes, a person who can't walk outside without getting recognized everywhere he goes, a person who gets mocked not only in, you know, other parts of the country because they're not on his team, but in his own city where he didn't do the thing that they wanted him to do. All these things can create a situation where it is untenable for you mentally, and you are having these very dark thoughts. And the one thing, the one sort of happy place that these players have normally is that locker room. He has not had that option for a long time now. And so, yes, if he goes back to that locker room after experience half of a year of this type of mockery, yes, it could probably change him just like that. Yeah. And we don't have to know if he actually went through anything that was diagnosable.
Well, and that's the element we haven't talked about yet. And, you know, Dwayne Wade aside. Whoever you were speaking to aside, I'm just trying to pick up on context clues.
It wasn't him. Sorry about that.
We haven't talked about how much money he was willing to give up and whether or not you believe that that's a true indicator of what someone's going through. But the idea that you would be unhappy enough that you forego the ability to play basketball, which is, you know, what you do and what you're great at, and give up roughly $20 million in order to be in a situation that you feel supported and safe and happy in. That's not just disgruntled. That's, I think, beyond that. I mean, what we talk about with Kyrie's willingness to miss out on paychecks in support of whatever stance he believes he's making, you know, Ben Simmons was sitting out as well because he was that deeply unhappy with the situation that he was in. And you could view that as privileged and immature and everything else, or you could view that as a sign of how truly troubled he was and how much that situation needed to change for him.
I'll add one more note. This player never once played for the Miami Heat.
Okay. I was just using that palm tree behind you. It was really giving me hints.
Yeah, no, always there. I can't move it. What else do we have?
All right. We are moving on to some football. And our question is, you know, Kyler Murray, he who had wiped his Instagram to two posts that did not have any Cardinals references, he has posted, which means we need to cover it. Did Kyler Murray's Instagram post convince you that he is cool with the Cardinals?
So as Charlie there said, he scrubbed his Instagram account except for a couple of things. No mention of the Cardinals, and then comes back after a couple of reports saying he's like self-centered and immature, says, I'm not about these games, not about these games. I'm just about football. That's all I want. I think you're about the games when you go ahead and scrub your Instagram account. But at the end, he said, love me or hate me, but I'm going to continue to grow and get better. And that, to me, I think is really the most important part here, okay? If you're a Cardinals fan, you're looking at this situation. Let's just say he is a little bit immature, 24 years old. Let's say he's a little bit self-centered, which, I mean, the franchise is centered around him, so why shouldn't he be centered around himself? I think that if those are the issues with your quarterback, you can teach that out of them. You can sort of life coach that out of him. You can sort of have these failures and sort of recognize, hey, maybe if you change this, this can you can succeed in this area as well. And the reason that I still have faith that that can happen and this isn't sort of an untenable situation is because you've got a coach in Cliff Kingsbury who basically with Kyler is learning along the way. And so unless you decide that this coach is not the coach for you, unless he is not the NFL answer and can win you a championship, then I think you just sort of ride these little personality bumps through. And I think, you know, in the modern day, when you talk about Instagram, it's just sort of a little signal. It's not really a whole lot of, you know, smoke. And I think, you know, they'll work past this. So I do believe that it was just sort of a way to get some conversation going and have him recognize that, hey, things aren't going as well as I want. But I don't think there's anything that's going to lead to a divorce in any way.
This is also just the type of thing that I think happens with not just in football, but across sports with superstars, where like the team keeps a lot of these like concerns about character and all that stuff kind of internal, and they don't bring it out in public because they don't want to make an issue or upset the ego of the superstar. This feels like pretty typical middle of the road. Like, this guy's been given the franchise keys, and You know, he's got some maturing that he has to do, and he went through his first kind of very public failure in his NFL career. And we'll see, like, how he responds to this is kind of going to be indicative, I think, of the path that his entire NFL trajectory is going to take.
I think the key is when he's referring to all that nonsense, to your point, Izzy, I don't think he means the nonsense that I've created by scrubbing my Instagram. Right. I think he means the nonsense being attributed to me of being selfish. Of there was one report that he spends halftime with his AirPods in, talking to his girlfriend or listening to music and not interacting. Another source has said that that's a flat out lie. All of the rumors around him, I think, is what he's referring to when he says all that nonsense, because he then follows it up by saying anybody who's played with me knows, you know, how hard I go out there. I think the problem is twofold. One is that you have someone who's immature enough to handle their issues and problems by publicly bringing attention to those problems. Instead of internally dealing, he scrubs his Instagram, he gets everybody talking about it to the point where we all assume it's a Super Bowl ad, because why would you be dumb enough to bring all of this drama to yourself unless it's for something like an ad that you're then going to come out afterwards and say was a joke? I'm shocked. I was shocked that this was not a Super Bowl play, because it feels so self-defeating to bring this attention to himself the way that he did on social media. Now, the team is not completely innocent here, because to your point, Izzy, if you have a quarterback who's got some issues and is dissatisfied, if you think he's as talented as most of us believe Kyler is, despite the way their season ended, you can coach out those issues and you can work together to make sure that you're happy. That happened with Russell Wilson. That happened with Aaron Rodgers. Like, there's been players who have been unhappy and they've been able to come back to that team and still played well. But if you're allowing these leaks, who are the people leaking this? Is it his teammates? Is it the team itself? Because that's the issue.
Well, who are you unhappy with if you're Kyler Murray? Because if it's like the people that you deal with hands-on, it would be just pretty much as high as the coach. That's about it,
or
right?
GM. Way that Aaron Rodgers was disgruntled with Gutekunst. I mean, he could have issues with
but with Kyler
team construction
Murray so
or,
far. Yeah. Like, he's got him DeAndre Hopkins. Like, he's got, you know, he's right. Made some improvements along the way.
In theory, his coach is his guy, so that would be a weird one. But maybe he doesn't like how things have gone. And what we've heard, allegedly, is that he considers himself the scapegoat for the season's failings. This season and the end-of-year failings last season. And maybe that's it alone. Maybe he feels like he's being blamed and he's just taking it out on everybody versus there being one specific butting of heads with someone at the team.
Or maybe he's tied with Cliff Kingsbury to the point where he wants to separate himself and say, no, he can take some of that blame.
Yeah.
Don't put it all on
of course.
Us together. It might be
but
some
I
of
think
him.
He already
maybe
is.
I should be the guy you build around, not both of us.
I think Kingsbury already is getting so much heat for it, so I thought it was strange that he seemed to believe that he was alone in getting blame. I mean, people have been talking about Kingsbury's coaching and the late season swoons as often as they've talked about Kyler's shortcomings, no pun intended.
Well, this should be a huge red flag, I think, generally for the Cardinals organization, that this kind of stuff, that the quarterback is in a culture that enables this kind of thing, that leaks are coming out about the quarterback. Like, this should be a big red flag to management and ownership that something is not right in the ship right now. I don't know if it's a coaching change. I don't know if it's a roster construction thing. I don't know if it's a general manager thing. But something, this should not be happening in an organization that, you know, in theory, is in a position to make the playoffs perennially with a guy like Kyler Murray, a quarterback.
Yeah, lines
Speaking
of communication.
Of Kyler Murray's shortcomings.
Clearly an issue.
Can we put that little Kyler Murray artist rendering back up there? Because are we doing all our quarterbacks this size with the giant football, or is it just him? He's not the tiniest quarterback in the league, is he?
As someone who's 5'7", I take great offense to this.
Have you guys seen the account Mini Footballer on Instagram? Because that's what it looks like. That guy focuses mostly on soccer players, but sometimes he branches out to other sports, and they've got the giant head and huge feet and small body. It's very delightful. It never gets old. I highly recommend
it's always funny.
Yeah.
One yes, Alabaster. He is absolutely the tiniest quarterback in the league.
He is, really?
Yes, okay. He's very small. Even his combine measurements were greatly disputed.
Yes.
But are his hands bigger than Pickett's?
unclear. Probably, because these are Kenny Pickett's hands. All right, my question, though, is are we sure that Kyler Murray is good enough to warrant this type of you know, reaction and for the organization to totally reshuffle again around him. Obviously, he's had these periods at the start of the last two seasons where he has looked revelatory for that team. But then the other half of those seasons, he's been terrible.
But don't you have to be good enough to look revelatory? Like, don't you have to have that ability
in order to get,
and then doing a consecutive seasons for the first half? Like, I think the second half comes to coaching.
Electrifying and fantastic. It's coaching and it's injury. That is the reason that it's worrisome, because he is small. Will he always end up being likely someone who's going to suffer injuries? And is he going to come back from those injuries a different player, which is what we saw this year, right? Without D-Hop and then post-injury, he just didn't look the same. When he is on, he is fantastic and absolutely deserving, particularly considering the fact that we know it is much harder to find a good quarterback than it is to find a satisfactory coach and other pieces. If you've got one that can be as great as he's been, yeah, you move everything to make it work.
Right, and I think it's as indicative of the lack of good NFL quarterbacks than anything in the NFL. Like, the fact that a guy who's been inconsistent has kind of been up and down but has shown greatness at times, like, he has to get the star treatment, because where else are you going to go to get a quarterback that, you know, could potentially have the hope of being a franchise QB?
When did NFL coach Cliff Kingsbury take that specific shot?
Yeah.
Like the loose collar. Is that a vest on?
I don't have my contacts in. Is that chest hair? Oh, it's a shadow. He looks a little Lance Bassey in that photo.
He does.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like
He looks like Ryan Gosling's cousin.
Uncle.
Yeah, I know we've talked about this before. I think his proximity to Gosling has afforded him a reputation of being better looking than he actually is. And I think that there are some other coaches that probably have a decent argument when we're always assigning Kingsbury as you know, the most attractive. A lot of it, first of all, was the house, because that house can get it. Like, if we're going... If we're going attractiveness based on house, that was a big part of it. Whereas, I don't know, I mean, LaFleur, no. He's not even a coach anymore. He's
done it. I've never wanted to hump a house before, but he's definitely an NFL coach. He's an NFL coach 10.
Of course.
You know,
but what
walking
about
around
LaFleur?
Everyday life, I mean.
You don't think LaFleur is better? I mean, I just think there was recently a study. I can't tell you sample size, but there was a study where people voted on the most attractive NFL coaches, and there were some real surprises in there. There were some real.
Bill Belichick
was
number one, right?
Bill Belichick was like 7 or 8, and my world was shaken. this is definitely a tangent, but I was just curious as I was admiring the Lance Bassness of it all, if we were still on that narrative, or if perhaps his late season swoons had also affected his rating in terms of attractiveness.
I believe Cliff is uglying it up, if you will. He doesn't want to be known just for the looks. He doesn't want to be that guy. And so I think if you were to have him clean up, I think you'd be like, oh, okay.
Okay.
I was entirely wrong about this. He's just put on his, you know, football attire over everything else.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury's tired of being known for his looks at his house. Like, he wants to be known for his.
He should scrub his Instagram of all photos that involve his face.
Yes.
And then just,
no
know,
face,
leave
no
the
house.
Rest of it.
Just football.
I'm more than just a pretty face, Cliff Kingsbury.
All right, guys, you ready for a round of
loses games at the end of seasons after having a successful start? I'd like to be known for that. Sorry, Alabaster.
All right, guys, it's time for a round of What Are the Chances? The game where we will ask you a question or show you a clip, and you tell us the chances. First one, we got some tweets from Richard Sherman, and our question is, what are the chances Richard Sherman is right about Matthew Stafford not being a Hall of Famer?
Before we get into, like, we're going to probably read these out. Okay, so he said, I'm not going to talk about it on the podcast, but the HOF bar is incredibly low now, like a participation trophy. No all-decade team, no all-pro, no MVP, one Pro Bowl, not even MVP of the Super Bowl, never considered the best in any year he played. At least Matt Ryan has an MVP. He's, of course, talking about Matt Stafford there, because we were having discussions about whether he will eventually be in the Hall of Fame. And I do think that this is going to be more of a debate about what the Lions do to players than what a Hall of Famer actually is. Because, like, I know this is oversimplifying, but I am just going eye test from the very beginning. Matt Stafford is a high, high, high quality quarterback. Okay, you can't put up those numbers, especially on a bad team, but you can't put up those numbers unless you're a quality quarterback. And I think his numbers are that skewed, or his wins and his accolades are that affected by his initial team that it affects everything that we see about him, and it affects the Hall of Fame discussion. And when you say that he got his first chance away from that team, in his first chance won a Super Bowl. No, didn't win the MVP, but won a Super Bowl. How can you argue that vehemently against it?
Wow, Vince Young made the Pro Bowl twice?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Izzy, I agree a lot of what you're saying. Like, it is almost impossible to remove him from the Lions and have a really good understanding of whether the lack of some of those statistics Richard Sherman is going for is because of his proximity to failure, right? Would he have been at more Pro Bowls if he didn't play for the Lions? If he was putting up those same stats on a winning team, yes, absolutely. If the stats were exactly the same and the Lions had wins, he would be in more Pro Bowls. I don't think he would be All-Decade. He's never been considered one of the
is
best.
Is that a real thing, by the way? Do we always give out All-Decade?
Yeah, teams? I think so. I mean, it's not one we talk about much, but I also think, though, like, for a Hall of Famer, you should be among the greatest when you're playing. Every year that you play, you should be in the conversation as one of the best. And he never has.
He was in MVP discussions this year for, I would say, the first half of the season.
But okay.
Discussion, whatever that
means. MVP is also different, I think, in terms of when we talk about who the greatest are. We don't think he's better than Burrow, Brady, Rodgers, Allen. I mean, how many quarterbacks do I have to go down that are playing just right now that we don't think he's better than? Again, I think Sherman nailed it. He has some very wild plays. He has a great arm. He is a compiler in terms of his ability to start for as long as he has, allows him to get numbers that other players will not get because they are not good enough to keep starting in this league for as long as he has. He has a very good career. The question is whether
isn't
you think
that worth something? Like 12 right,
but,
years of losing and
is
a really
worth
good
the Hall
team
of
says
fame?
We got to get that guy.
That's the question, though. Is he? How do you see the Hall of Fame? Because a lot of people are critical of the NBA being, or the sorry, the Basketball Hall of Fame being the Hall of Very Good. They don't want the NFL Hall of
that's
Fame
fair.
To look like that.
But what does it really mean? Like, what are we're not putting actual definitions on these things. It's just like, for me, if I want to go, like, if I'm ever going to go visit the NFL Hall of Fame, I just want to know the story of the NFL. And I think Matthew Stafford.
I think you can tell him without Matt Stafford.
A lot of empty numbers and his Super Bowl. I think he deserves a spot there. Will deserve a spot there when it's said and done. If this is his only playoff run, I don't think so. But if he has three or four more and retires at 37, 38 with that maybe, you know, a couple more championship game appearances, I think.
Wait, really quick, June. So, just because it's on this last thing. So, if we're going to hold it against the Lions that he was successful in terms of numbers, but didn't get accolades and awards and didn't have a chance to perform very often at the playoff level and whatever, shouldn't we also then care that those many starts and stats were gotten for a team that did nothing? Right? Like, we can be proud of his durability, I guess, his longevity. But if it's with the Lions, it's not like he started for a great team for years and years. He was able to stay the starter for a team that wasn't good for a long time. And yes, his first shot outside of that team was successful, but that was Aaron Donald and Von Miller and Cooper Kupp. There were a lot of pieces that went into that. It wasn't just Matt Stafford. In fact, he had two picks in the Super Bowl. And were it not for that defense completely stifling Burrow and company, they wouldn't have won because of Stafford.
The question I ask off of this is, do you consider Eli Manning a Hall of Famer? If we're going to take this like story approach to the Hall of Fame in football,
I don't consider Eli Manning to be as good a quarterback as Matthew Stafford. I think Matthew Stafford in his time, I will take the Matthew Stafford that I saw play in Detroit for over a decade. I will take that guy on my team over the Eli Manning that I saw play for.
I think Matt Stafford is a better quarterback than Eli Manning. Eli Manning is a great quarterback in clutch moments, and he's been on the right teams at the right times and led them to wins. I think he is a very debatable Hall of Famer. I think Matt Stafford is a more talented quarterback. It depends on whether you're just going based on the subjectivity of who you think is better or whether you need numbers, statistics, awards, accomplishments to back up that opinion. That's where it gets tricky.
That's what the Hall of Fame debate always is,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I don't think that Stafford or Eli Manning are Hall of Famers, but I don't rule out Stafford one day being there, especially given how talented that he is on the field and the numbers that he's put up. Like, I'm not ruling it out forever, but as of right now, no, I'm not there.
Right.
We should change the name of this game to No Yes Maybe.
I also think it is worth noting that there were a lot of pieces that changed mid-season for this Rams team. So not only did he have to learn a new system, a new coach, new teammates, etc., but then mid-season, he lost Woods, you bring in OBJ. So he could get exponentially better in this situation, building on what is already a tremendous amount of skill and accomplishment, when he settles in and has more time. So the fact that he won a Super Bowl and still had some inconsistencies in his very first year, I think there is room for growth. And he might eventually be a guy that's very deserving. I just don't think he's right now.
I'm going to admit my opinion is biased because he just looks the part. Like from day one, big, strong, great arm, you know, looks the part and tough, whatever. And you sort of want that to fulfill its potential. And if it does fulfill its potential, then it should be Hall of Fame worthy. It's just a matter of, hey, he doesn't seem to have fulfilled it all because of the team he was on.
Jay Cutler would love for the Hall of Fame to be decided based on whether you look the part and you have a big arm and enough people believe that you're eventually going to pan out into everything that everyone's expected of you. And that is not the case.
Ryan, next question.
Ryan Mallett, no, yes, put him maybe in the Hall of Fame.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
I should note as we move on that part of Matt Stafford's statistical resume is the product of the fact that he played in this pass-happy era of the NFL, which has basically caused a parabolic growth in all of these quarterback statistics across the board, for even for guys who we think of as being mediocre. Kirk Cousins, Hall of Famer? And, I don't think so.
That's why the compiler the idea, statistics are a real problem
throw
for
in
me
the
here.
Idea that they were always behind, so he had to throw more than other people.
He got them into a lot of trouble, which is partly the reason for all those fourth quarter comebacks, because you got to be behind to have a lot of comebacks.
Stat Padford. All right, moving on.
Sack Matford, as I used to call him.
Next one. We got a tweet here. What are the chances the Rams should let LeBron take part in the championship parade?
Was anyone else like, did anyone else first read that and be like, ew, this isn't your moment? And then be like, ah, I get it. It's kind of cool and fun, you know, title town. But like, I don't know. It kind of rubbed me a little the wrong way that like, I feel like the Rams want their moment. It doesn't need to also be LeBron's moment.
It's also too that the Rams haven't had a chance to become like an LA team yet. Like even when you go to LA, people still talk about are kind of still indifferent. Like the Dodgers and Lakers have been established for, you know, decades on decades now. Like give the Rams their moment to like bask in the glory of being like, we brought a championship to LA and people still being indifferent.
Yeah. Like LeBron, he actually had this post after he left Miami that they played a game in Miami, and it was 305 to my city, which is like a Drake song reference. But like, you can't have all the cities. Like, they can't all be yours. Like, go ahead and claim Cleveland. I think, like, who's newer to LA? The Rams. LeBron is newer to LA than the Rams are, right? Is it close?
It's a tie.
Anyway, I feel like it feels like the more he stays there, like, the more he pumps up the bubble championship, which a lot of people are going to try to knock, and the more this team struggles and it feels like people are blaming him because he wanted Russell Westbrook, I feel like not that there's a detachment between LA and LeBron, but there's not nearly that connection between LeBron and the other LA greats.
He's also an owner of the Red Sox while also wanting to celebrate the Dodgers. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Also, a mixed bag.
Also, to your point, Izzy, like, the Lakers are trash right now, and he's like, maybe this will redirect people to the memory of us winning. That, to your point, most people don't see as like quite the same as a legit title. So, but let's go back and think about the good old days. Don't focus on right
Only
now.
Only three Lakers are eligible for this parade, I believe.
Yeah.
The rest of them can stay home.
That's a great point, too. It's like you get to fly in a bunch of people that are no longer with the team to have this parade with two other teams that you're not really affiliated with.
What's up, Charlie?
Izzy, I have to ask you this. So do you want to go on record and say that the bubble playoffs were a fluke?
Ooh.
You want to say the bubble playoffs are a fluke.
So this is your thing now. You're going to take me saying what other people are saying and then say that I'm saying it?
Well,
he's getting a hard time. He's having
it.
A hard time. If he keeps bringing it up, people are just going to point to Anthony Davis and his bubble success and all the other sort of weird anomalies that happened in that Orlando end of the season. I'm not going to say it.
I already did. I said it at the time, and it didn't go over very well. But I said at the time that there is a little bit of an asterisk, that it was not the same as every other title. There were not home and away games. There was guys that were not available because they didn't even go to the bubble. There were guys that got kicked out of the bubble. It's always going to be different. And if you're sad about that because your team made it very far, I apologize for offending you. They still earned it. To win, was very stressful and complicated, and it's a testament to their ability to play through that. But it was different, and we're always going to see it as different. That's just the way it goes.
TJ Warren became that a superstar Roger Maris for 2 weeks thing... in the bubble. TJ yes, Warren became a superstar for like 2.5 weeks in the bubble. Like, that should be enough evidence that it was different.
June, do you think that if they didn't use the asterisk for the Roger Maris record, would we be talking about records and such with asterisk discussions, or would we be talking about it another way? Because that pretty much was the first and only like major time.
Do you recognize that that asterisk is used across the English language and beyond to denote that there is a correction or some sort of specificity that will then be, well, footnotes, it's actually a 1 or a 2 or a 3, depending on what number. But it's the similar idea of refer to the asterisk at the bottom to tell you some sort of clarity or you know, specifics that are required.
Right, but this was all eyes on that
one. You're just meaning in the sports world, would we have some other
language? No, I'm just saying in the history, you know how things just happen, right? Trends just happen, words just are used.
Right.
I'm just wondering if it wasn't such a huge deal, Roger Maris, in this particular incident, maybe it would be down the road, maybe it would be for like Olympic, you know, records with like Ben Johnson or whatever, maybe we talk about that one. But yeah, I'm just curious. Just wondering what June thought about that.
There also aren't many contexts or conversations where we bring up the use of punctuation in sports. Like, I feel like we try to use sports as a way to get away from thinking about grammar and punctuation. Like,
just you. I never want to get away from grammar and punctuation. It's just my favorite thing.
I mean, I you know, cut my teeth covering the Miami Heat, and it was the Miami Heat. Nobody knows.
Yeah, that's very frustrating.
Is it RBI? Is it RBI?
It's RBI, obviously. Runs batted in. Really quickly, since you brought up punctuation and grammar and stuff, every week on my podcast, that's what she said with Sarah Spain, I have a word of the week, and I am very proud of this word of this week because it is absolutely apt for the occasion. The word, which means to be worn out or exhausted, which many of us are, including my voice after Super Bowl week, is ramfeezled. It's got ram right in it. I am ramfeezled after a long weekend of watching the Rams win the Super Bowl. Isn't that a great word? Instead of just saying I'm exhausted, you say I'm ramfeezled.
I didn't even know that was a word. That one.
It's a word. Also, forswunk, which means you're so burned out from working. Thank you, I am a nerd. You're so burned out from working that you're like overwhelmed at the idea of any more work. You're exhausted and burned out. You are forswunk, which means
that
you
sounds
are-
sounds like my golf swing,
you've
actually.
You've almost given up before you've begun because you're already so tired. Aren't those great words? Don't you love learning new words? Do you want to hear the greatest word I learned? It's the most beautiful. It's my new favorite word of all words. It's so beautiful. The word is apricity. Apricity, and that means the warmth of the sunshine in the winter.
I don't know who started this conversation, but I used to have talks about words that would make for a beautiful name if they didn't already mean something
apricity.
Terrible.
I want to name a
like
kid
diarrhea.
That.
I would name a child diarrhea if it wasn't.
No. Apricity is a beautiful name for a child.
I mean, Daria has a name, so how far of a jump is diarrhea?
Where you serve winter cocktails.
Yeah, like syphilis. That'd be a nice name if it wasn't.
Syphilis is a pretty name. If not for the context. Syphilis, Gutierrez.
I'm getting PTSD from SAT studying with all the words that Sarah's throwing out there.
Chlamydia Lee.
Mm. Oh, my God.
Okay. For the record, Izzy, I loved your Roger Maris question. That blew my mind for a second. The fact that that was the beginning of the sports asterisk. But now it's time for a game of whodunit. The game where we give you a quote. You guys have a minute to come together and tell us whodunit. First quote. As I struggle with the paper. To me, Magic is still working with us. In terms of an official capacity in the NBA, you have to be very clear as to who can negotiate on your behalf and who can't. So he doesn't have that official designation, but in terms of his support, his wisdom, his insight, I freely call on him as needed. And your choices are Jeannie Buss, Frank Vogel, Rob Pelinka, or LeBron James.
So the question is, who's admitting to tampering using Magic Johnson as a middleman?
But it's not
tampering,
right?
Because that's essentially what this is, right?
No, if he's
just a former... Magic talks to somebody else.
But if he's just a former player, he's not... That's not tampering.
But he's saying there is still working with us. It seems like a wink-wink
situation. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, though. It's the equivalent of having any former player that still feels an affinity for the team being supportive or telling some young player, I really enjoyed my time there. You're going to like it. Like, it's not tampering. I think it's Jeannie or Rob. What do you guys think?
I think it's Jeannie.
I'm going to go with Jeannie. I think Rob. Wasn't Rob seen in Disneyland? Like, I don't know if he's doing interviews right now. I'm going to go with Jeannie just based on that. But also because, you know, her and Magic are super tight. So, yeah. We'll go with Jeannie.
Yep.
There it is.
Yeah, that's not tampering.
What's the context of this, though? What's the point of this? Like, I know it's not tampering, Sarah, but I'm just saying, if you have somebody in the front office say, hey, to me, he still works with us, we call him all the time,
I think,
and then
it's
that
probably
person goes and hits up other players. And no, it's the indirect tampering. It's not technically right. Letter of the law tampering, but it's her saying, hey, this is the way I do things.
I think it's just probably a question that was asked of her relating to, you know, that there was incredible drama around his departure mid-season. He just, they showed up in a hallway and told everybody he was quitting, and the fallout from that, the questions about their relationship and whether they had healed from that breach of trust and everything else, probably inspired that answer to say, like, hey, we're good now. And it's basically just as if he's working for us. He just is allowed to tweet the most obvious tweets of all time while also working for
us. I don't know what was so funny there, June, but I need to get that reaction from you at least once a show, because it was great.
Because we've been talking a lot about diva behavior over the course of this show. Like, that was so crazy that he was just like, you know what? I don't need to treat this situation like I would handle any other job situation. I'm just going to talk to the press and be like, I'm out. Like, how many people in the world can quit their job in that way and not have, like, the blowback be, like, hugely detrimental to their reputation?
Yeah. Did you see
the
guy?
It's like a therapist who only wants to tackle a few things, a few of your issues, not all of your issues.
We're not touching on the daddy stuff. Everything else.
No. Yeah. Just talk to me about something else.
Did you see the guy who quit his job by hiring the Island Boys to do a cameo?
Oh, wow.
Are you guys familiar with the Island Boys?
We have talked about the Island Boys on the show before.
Island Boys. He hired them via cameo to quit his job for him and then sent the video to his boss. And then I can't do the Island Boys accent, but they basically are like, yeah, he hates the job and he hired us to tell you that he's quitting and he wants to do a job he likes and that you suck and he's over it. And, you know, they did it in their own special Island Boys way. I highly recommend looking it up.
How has Island Boys come up multiple times in
on the show?
How did you not know
they're superstars,
who they
man.
Were, June?
Superstars.
I'd like to know what their cost is, what their rate is. On
whatever
cameo,
it is, it's too much. They should not be given any
money. It's going to be depressing. Whatever the number, if it's in triple figures, it's quite depressing. They actually held a set like at a club, like one of the best clubs down here, Club Story, and I was just like, wow, these 15 minutes are lasting way too long.
Right after you bought front row seats?
No. Buy them. I'm kidding. What else do we have?
Last quote. Okay. I'm going to use this moment to get on my soapbox and stop tagging me in all these horrible basketball clips of people taking bad shots, telling me I ruined the game. I did not tell y'all to shoot that shot. And your choices are Reggie Miller, Steph Curry, Trae Young, or Caitlin Clark.
It's got to be Curry or Clark,
right?
It's got to be Curry or Clark.
It's clearly Clark. You see where she's pulling.
Here's the thing, though. Clark, like, agreed that she can shoot from anywhere. She's also not always incredibly efficient, though. So I don't know if she would bring attention to herself in that way. Whereas, like, Steph is so clearly, like, I don't know. I feel like it's Steph.
I think it's Steph.
Not Ben Simmons.
I thought you were going to throw Steve Nash on there because you forgot.
Well, the new generation's like yelling Kobe when you take like a crazy hard shot is just yelling Steph when you take
you
a
know
really
what the key
three.
Is? That's the key is no one's telling Caitlin Clark she ruined the game. People are telling people are blaming Steph for that. So it's Steph.
It's definitely Steph.
I'm going to use this moment to get on my soapbox. And stop tagging me in all these horrible basketball clips of people taking bad shots.
Tell him, please.
I ruined the game. I did not tell y'all to shoot that shot.
That's great.
That is so true. Like when you just take up and pull up and take a 40-footer, it's gonna, you know, it's not gonna go, but you just yell Curry because what the bleep? Yeah, that's not the legacy I think he wanted.
Yeah. Steph,
he was not referring to Caitlin though, because she does make those shots, which is unbelievable. She's the only one.
It is wild though how much irrational it is wild how much irrational confidence Steph has given players at pickup games to just shoot way deep threes for no reason.
Yep. Oh, Bob. Oh, Bob.
This is one image for the podcast listeners that just pulled up the image of Bob Ryan on, I don't know what network that I is saying, that Steph Curry ruined the game of basketball. Well, it is, I mean
Bob thinks the three-point shot ruined the game. Bob thinks that the three-point shot ruined the game. Not Steph Curry alone, but just having a three-point shot ruined the game. So I imagine Steph Curry is enemy number one. That guy's face is like, I don't know.
I also
I could experience what Steph Curry feels once out of every, I don't know, 30 times I put up that shot, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it, and my teammates can go to hell for a game or two.
I also love how the photo that we put up of Bob looks like where he's staring down at us from like a like the basketball throne perch.
No, it looks like he's about to trim his nose hairs.
That too. That too.
All right. Any other quotes?
No.
Oh, no.
Show, guys.
10 seconds. All right. Good job, everyone.
I'd like to thank you for allowing me to wear my Valentine's Day outfit that I didn't wear yesterday because I was so hungover that we didn't go to dinner because I had to wake up so early to fly back from LA and I wanted to die. So I wore my cute Valentine's Day sweater and earrings for you guys. You guys are my Valentines.
Thank you. Happy belated Valentine's Day.
Most people are seeing that the heart is about the size of a half an ant.
There are many hearts on it. It's full of hearts. The whole sweater is hearts. You can just only see a couple of them. And then my earrings are hearts too.
That's a Woody Page joke there, but I'm not going to offer it.
Thank you very little.